I'm here in Henderson, Kentucky. Today is the 16th of August, 2002. I'm here with Mr. Pierre Jackson. Mr. Jackson, would you just give me a little bit about your background? Where are you from? Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, I was born in Detroit, Michigan. I lived in Indiana and Kentucky. Spent most of the time in Kentucky. And had my education here in Henderson Douglas. Left Henderson Douglas and went to Kentucky State University, as it is called now. And I went to Murray State and master's down at Murray State, plus additional hours at Evansville and other schools as well. So it's been very productive for us as such. My wife is still living. I have four children, two boys and two girls. All have finished school. One's a doctor. One daughter works at American Airlines, another daughter works in L.A. at one of the companies that has to do with enlarging and photographing and whatnot. And my youngest son is a minister, and he's starting his own church in town. He worked a number of years at Whirlpool in Evansville. So that's his two girls and two boys. And We have four grandchildren out of that total group there.
But
I'm not bad for old man.
Now, how old were you when you came to Kentucky? Do you remember?
About 9 years old. My great-great-grandfather lived here. And he was originally a slave in the state of Kentucky. And he was very fortunate, the people that he lived for. He lived where the house is now. He lived over on the top of the hill, and they're very fortunate because he had a chance to learn a trade, carpentry, and a number of the churches in Henderson, both white and black, have had his services, and his son was responsible also. And even some of the churches that you'll find, if you look closely, you'll find the curve and a marking in there. And he had, his name was Birch Carr, so you see a BC somewhere in his church. The church that we go to now, about 110, 15, 20 years old, First Missionary Baptist Church. He was a deacon there, and also he helped to build that individual church. And it's still standing after all those many, many years.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm. And you attended Douglas High School here in Henderson.
Douglas High School.
What year did you graduate from Douglas?
45.
1945.
And immediately. And I'm very fortunate because I had a coach named Lorenzo Jones. And he was always looking for a place for his players and whatnot. And so the night that I graduated, met me at the end of the stage, and he always called me Red. That's when I had hair. And he said, Red, what do you want to do? He said, do you want to go to college? And how is it a 19-year-old kid that's given to make a decision like this right then on the spot? So I told him, well, yes, I'd like to go to college. He said, you got it. He said, things are going to set up for you to go to school. He'd already done it. And I didn't know it then, but my family knew his family in Huntington, West Virginia, when we lived there. And his family was from, his wife's family was from Ohio, right across the river there. But he was instrumental in getting a great number of players into school, a great number of students in school at Kentucky State and places, and he was a fellow who was a graduate of Howard University, and his father, H.F. Jones, was the principal of the old Douglas School here, and he was one of the founding fathers of a lot of the things that they had.
Is that Hence Jones?
Hence Jones, yes. You heard of him too also?
I read about him a little bit.
Yeah, and then he worked with the insurance company, domestic insurance company out of Louisville, and then another insurance company in Chicago. But he was a very fine man, and he worked you hard, but there was always a great number of awards for it. And I don't know whether he's made it into the Henderson Hall of Fame or not, but he was very instrumental in seeing that us folks got a chance to go to college and to come back. And a great number of people came back. I had no idea of coming back. But he was the first person that had graduated. He said, come on back to Henderson. Everything's for you. You can go ahead and school and teach and whatnot, whatever. So we came back, and my wife said, that's the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. But I've enjoyed it. We've seen a good number of things happen, both good and bad. And it's surprising when you run into people that you taught so many years ago, and they still are very appreciative of the things that happened with them in that period of time. But he was a very fine man. His wife also, she was, how do I say, sort of mother to everybody. And almost every weekend, before a game or after a game, there was something at their home for the players. But you know, you work a little harder, you know, get a little something to eat afterwards.
Very nice.
Very good, but it's very good.
Where did you attend school before Douglas High School here in town?
That's the only place I've ever attended school.
Well, and did it serve students that were, I guess, younger than ninth grade also?
Well, that was Douglas of ninth grade, and then after the integration, you graduated from Alva Street School. It was the elementary school on Alva Street. And you graduate from that one and go to Douglas High School.
Did you attend Alva Street School also?
Yes, I attended.
Okay, before, yeah, before Douglas. Yeah. Okay.
And most of them see. I don't think but one of my children had a chance to go there. I think about one. No, yeah, two. Not Deborah and Mike, I believe, went there.
To Alvis?
Alvis Street School. And then they went on to the other school.
Back when you were a student, and I know you later taught at Douglas High School, you know, how did those schools' buildings compare to the white schools here in Henderson?
I would do a comparison, you know that. I mean, they're there. You do the best with what you can, and they enough to get by. The standards weren't as great as they were at other schools. They tried as well, you know, to make it look good, but a lot more could have been done in most of those areas. For instance, Douglas was built in that little what do you call it? Little gymnasium that you run up and down the floor once, and you're at the end, and you played all your basketball games there. But I guess that was probably one of the better gyms in this area until you went to Madisonville and Hopkinsville and other places like that, where they had a large African-American population and more people that were really interested in the school system, doctors, lawyers, and whatnot. Hopkinsville was full of lawyers and doctors, and in Paducah, Kentucky, and other places that had large schools and had good sports programs. So if we'd had probably more of that here in the town, we probably maybe would have helped later on to keep the school, you know, in the town as it should have been kept. Because the school was in good shape. It lasted there a number of years. And one of the former students bought it, by the name William Dixon Jr. He bought it, bought the school. And then it lasted here, and then he sold it, and then to get all the things out of the, how you said, to represent education or to represent the kind of building that you had, it was demolished completely. And now they have a home up there for the, what they call the homeless and whatnot, in mm-hmm. that particular area that's run by the city. But it could still been there and have some of those schools, because the old Barrett School is still standing there. And they have remodeled it, and they've used it recreation, and also use it for the housing area, for the headquarters.
Who did Douglas High School serve blacks outside of the city of Henderson?
No, well, most of the students, those living in Henderson, came from the county. And they had a county high school for a while. And then when that...
A black county high school?
Henderson County High School. Is that the name of Henderson County High School? Yeah. And then when that was renewed, then everybody came from those areas into Douglas. They were bused into those particular areas. Cardin and all the other areas. I guess most people came from Cardin. And most people, that's where they live. And then they had one school, I think it's 7th Street School, which was an elementary school up there. And it disappeared also when they went after integration, they started putting kids in those other schools.
Can you maybe describe the teachers at Douglas from a student's perspective, you know, before you or as a teacher perspective as well, I guess.
Say it again now.
Yeah, what, tell me about the teachers at Douglas High School.
All the teachers were degree teachers. They went to Memory School, Howard University, Evansville University, Tennessee State, Kentucky State, and all around. And people had, they had certification, they were good in their individual fields, and consequently it ranged from those who were in age to those that were just finishing school. And when I was there, there were something about 10 to 12 teachers, and it's a very good mixture here. The math teacher there, Mr. Sheldon Lang, was probably one of the best math teachers in this particular area, and he was one of the teachers that they carried into the end of the program. Ellie Jones was a sharp person besides being a coach, and he helped kids, and he worked in the program, you know, off-season and whatnot. Then there's Herbert Kirkwood. He was a principal. He was from Indiana University, master's plus degree. His wife also, Mary, had degrees, and I think she has a master. Myself, William Dixon, who was probably one of the better shop people in the area. Santa Mae Dixon, she was from, I think, Fisk University. And she taught history. And we had Miss Eugenia Mundy, who was a home economics person, who could do it all. And she's very much thought of, she stayed until retirement, then she went out. We enjoyed kids, and she started a center for kids in her home and whatnot. Then we had people who came in after a period of time from other schools, Tennessee State, and what else? All over. It wasn't just strictly teachers from State of Kentucky. They came all over. Had a good makeup of them.
Oh, so there weren't just Henderson people either.
They came all over. Yes, they came all over the area. That helped to help the students and such to get a chance to see somebody besides home folks.
Right. Did you play sports there at Douglas?
Yes, I played sports. I played everything they had.
Yeah.
Football, basketball, and then LD started a boxing program. That's where I started my boxing, and then. I received a football scholarship from Kentucky State University, and that's how I got through school. And I played there, and then I was the captain of the boxing team and captain of the football team last year.
At Kentucky State?
Yeah, and I won the state of Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio boxing championship, and lost in the finals of the National Golden Gloves in Chicago Tribune. I was beaten by a fellow named Westbury Bascom, who was really a professional in disguise. He was extremely good. So I lost that. And the peculiar thing about it, that is that my mother never saw me fight. She never saw me play a game of sports. And this happened one night. She was sitting by an old Philco radio, and she happened to be turning it down. He said, this is the Golden Gloves from Chicago Stadium. And the fight next is the Westbury Bascom versus from St. Louis and Pierre Jackson from Henderson, Kentucky. And of course, I fought for the OIG. I had to go from when I was in school, you went from Frankfort to Louisville to Cincinnati, because see, in Kentucky, you couldn't fight the white fellows, you want to say it that way.
Right.
So you had to go. That way, it's because your competition is there. So actually, you had a white team and you had a black team, and both these teams went to Cincinnati. So we went to Cincinnati. They didn't care what you look like. You fought, and so we won there. And I coached the team there at Douglas. At Kentucky State, also being a performer, because we really didn't have a boxing coach as such. So they let me do that because that was an outside activity. We fought at Lexington. The fellow that was, this was the Herald Leader newspaper, Templin, Ed Tippler was the man named, and he was a very fine fellow. He took care of us very well, and saw to it that we had the best of everything, because we brought a lot of glory to the city of Lexington, and made it very nice. But very fortunate there at school, very fortunate with the boxing program. I was able to make the Hall of Fame there at Kentucky State. I think the first round they established into the Kentucky State Hall of Fame, and I was the captain of the football team at that time, and I went in both in boxing and football. And I lost one devilish fight, and that was the last fight in Chicago. But we had some good fellows that we worked with, and the number of people. And there was this fellow in Evans Henderson, named the coach of the Henderson City School, named Bill Dawson. He was at University of Kentucky at that time. He played football up there on scholarship, and he would come down almost every night to the boxing meet, and he said that rooting and hollering for us as such. But that's where I met him there at the boxing tournament, and then he came here, and then he always talked about, you know, the boxing there in Lexington.
But he was from, not from,
no,
here though.
No, he played University of Kentucky football.
I see.
And ended up there.
When you played other sports besides boxing at Douglas, what other schools did Douglas compete against?
Well, they had regular conferences. We remember the Kentucky High School, I forget what it is, but they missed, it's in that list, so you know that it's different from the white program. So they had their whole program. L.D. Jones was one of the persons who helped establish that. But almost every town that had a black school in the state of Kentucky participated in athletics, basically football and basketball. Our biggest rival was Orangeburg, Kentucky. Western High. And the fellow down there named Joe Kendall. You ever heard of Joe Kendall?
I don't think.
He was an All-American at Kentucky State, and I think he played a little professional football, but he came back to Orangeburg. And consequently, that was always a Thanksgiving Day game. And everybody came on over to see that particular game. And it was a good rival, but Madison was great in basketball, no football. Hopkinsville had football, Paducah had football, Mayfield, Kentucky football. And then as you went up the other way, you had other schools in that area, the Mountain teams that played up there. And we won when they integrated, we had to play, I can't think of the name of the team, but it was the first time you ever played a team from the other leagues. We played the last year, 65, 64, something like that, and we beat the team here. We beat them here that game. To set up, for the state championship, we went there. And you couldn't get into place. It was just like that packed in jam.
You were talking about when you were coaching, though,
yeah,
at this coach, point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Douglas was still, I guess the athletics had been integrated to where.
No, it hadn't. It never been integrated.
Oh, it
no,
wasn't?
That's just before the integration set. Because when integration came, boom, the program was kicked out completely. Teachers were placed where they wanted to be placed, wherever they wanted to be placed. Teachers left here as such. And the kids, I guess they were encouraged to come into the sports program. I guess they were encouraged to come into the sports program over there. At that time, it was called City High School.
And that's so Douglas High School never played a white team?
Oh, yes.
That's
yes,
what I'm talking about. Yeah. Where the sports became integrated,
yeah.
I guess, before
Douglas
dismantled.
Football, yeah, sports was integrated. That was the last years of it, and then we played basketball, and we had probably the best team around here, and we played. I think it's. Played Holy Name, and I think Jim Dixon scored something like, Jim Dixon was
one of the outstanding ball players, Billy Dixon, Charles Marshall, who else? John Shirley, John Burroughs. Those fellows were just terrific athletes. I mean, just some of the kids never went home. I think schools out of practice, they go out on the playground and play basketball at night. But we played football. We had a chance to play the white teams, and that's when we made it to the finals of the state. In basketball, I think we played 1 year, but we came, we got ready to play in the tournament. The kids received all kind of threatening calls on the telephone. I received those calls. People come by your house honking their horns, and the even the officials, they did not play a good ball game. And that has been mentioned a number of times in the newspaper by the sports editor here. If it had been on better ground, we would get a chance. We would have had a better chance. But at the same time, you remember when Lexington and Dunbar won, we won one. Coach, what's his name? Coach.
Is it Lewis Stout or St. Roach?
Roach was
Roach.
Yeah.
Sanford Roach.
Yeah, it was us. And they talked before the game, and you know he played a slow down game, and he won his ball game with that one on the state. But we didn't play a slow down game, and consequently, by the time the halftime came, Jim Dixon had X number of fouls.
In other words, the two tallest fellows we had, they were in very, very bad shape. Charles Marshall had fouls, and of course, City High School won the tournament. But we had to come back to play the second game, and we wiped them off the board, wiped them off the second half. In other words, we lost in the finals of the, I guess it was called region at that time, or whatever it was.
District or region.
District, I think they had to go to region. And then the region, when we got in the region, we wiped them out, and then we had to play against them.
I see.
Yeah. So we beat them out.
What was the response to that? You know, what happened in town after
that? Well, that's what I'm saying. All this happened when we got ready to play City High School in the tournament. That's when all the calls came to the people from Charles Marshall was the
before leader. The game.
Oh, yeah, Charles Marshall. I mean, I wish you could have taped some of the calls that he received and other players, Jim Dixon and other players that received the calls from people. That
were they, did, what?
Threatening call. We'll kill you, so-and-so, you this, that, and the other. Don't bong over there. And all those types of calls in my house we had.
Do you think it affected the play of the players at all?
It probably did, but they didn't show it as well. But when you get to the point where you know that if I bump you, I'm going to be, you know, it's going to be a foul call, and I don't have a chance and whatnot. And that's really happening in some of the games. And also in the one when we played in the region, when we played Davis County. Davis County had a good ball club. But overall, we had a good ball club, too. And I think on the even ground, we would have beaten them. We had defeated them. But we lost to them in the regional, and they went on to the state. Okay. Now there, if you ever get, there is a picture up to the community center of that team. And the trophy, I think we only lost about 6 or 7 or 8 games in the whole period of time. Jim Dixon went on to be a great basketball player. Charles Marshall did too, and others did as well. And so,
But it sounds like you beat the Henderson City
second
team
time
in the region. What was the result after the game? You know, you told me what happened before, the threats.
Well, I think everybody was sort of disgusted. Everybody,
no matter what I do now, but there was still that friction, the language and whatnot that happened within the total program that night.
But the kids, I mean, it was terrible. The calls that they received, the things that happened. I had one of the fellows in my neighborhood said, Mr. Jackson, don't worry. Said, if anything happens, let me know. And I got my double-barrel shotgun, and I'll take care of you.
But, you hate to have things happen like that because of a sports affair. And consequently, they played, our team played a reception fan game in the second ball game. And said if we would have run, in other words, we didn't win the district.
I understand.
In the second.
But you won when it mattered.
Yeah, we won the region. We would love to have won the district to have the trophy, but we get the trophy, the second place trophy. And so we defeat the Henderson City School. Now, Henderson County, the Henderson County School that we played in the region, because they beat us in the district. And the thing that the people don't realize is all these kids, they play together. They play on the playgrounds and
outside of the school system.
They go on and play everybody on Saturday and whatnot. Nobody giving a kitty. But when you get in there and you have officials that sort of taint the game, it makes a difference. Kids don't play the very best.
I'm sure there was a lot bigger interest from the crowd's perspective too.
If
blacks and whites are playing each other on the street, there's not really something at stake. There's no school name,
no. And
nobody's really watching it except those that are playing. Yeah. But I understand that.
Yeah.
The difference there.
The difference was, and I think it affected us in the first ball game. From the second ball game, it didn't affect anybody. They did what they were supposed to do. But the last game, it was one of those things that you aren't going to the state, and you know you aren't going to the state. But I think Dunbar went to the state, and I think they wanted something of that particularly.
You may be right. I remember hearing that, too.
The rules of the team. And a peculiar thing, I did my practice teaching at Lexington Dunbar.
Really?
Yeah. And I knew Roach and all those people up there. And I ran a boxing program there for them as a means of fundraising and whatnot. And we ran the, came back a couple years later on, and I ran the swimming pool program for them, the Lexington leader. Ed Timberland, he brought me back. I should have stayed there. He wanted me to stay there. Very, very fine fellow. But Roach was an exceptional fine coach. I think he's still living.
I think so.
And I don't know what I know he's not coaching and such, but he turned out some tremendous basketball players. I think some of the kids played for University of Kentucky and some of the other areas and such. But it's a heck of an experience when you hear kids tell you that, you know, should I do, should I don't, should I play or should I not play? But there were a lot of parents who were there and very protective for us, the kids were there. But that's a heck of an experience for kids that goes with something like that when it's just a matter of a basketball game.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you came back to teach at Douglas, can you kind of just explain your teaching experience there?
I did my practice teaching at Lexington Dunbar. And when I came back, I walked right into the football program. And Pete Rimford and I started with the program, football. So we got a chance to meet most of the fellows before school started. What did I teach? I taught health, sociology, biology, economics, and physical education. So you had the whole program there.
Was that typical back then for a teacher to teach all those different stuff? You think even in a white school that would have been typical?
Probably not so. There were specialists. You know, if you know the superintendent, you can normally get the kind of things you want. I'm sure the coaches didn't have all those jobs too. But not only did you teach, but you coached, and you did all the other things in the program. For instance, I had plays and variety shows and all those things to help get money to take care of the individual programs that we needed. So it's a good experience. You got a chance to do those. And a number of teachers who came here, they got 2 or 3 years experience and they went someplace else.
Mm-hmm. What was your first year teaching at Douglas High?
45, 49, because I walked right out of college right into the job.
49?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons you came back was the influence of your coach.
Yeah, L.D. Jones. Yeah. I did that. Mm-hmm.
So you were working at Douglas High when schools were totally segregated, and then in 1954 the Supreme Court made its landmark ruling, mm-hmm, about segregation. What did you remember that day?
I guess I do.
Or the announcement.
Yeah, it never bothered me to the degree. I'd been exposed to the thing that's supposed to be normal, you know. And almost every place that I went, even though that I may be in a program, other people would always want you to help. In other words, the softball program, some of the recreation programs and those things, we did what we could with the kids. And they played, we'd stop a game and the kids would all come up there to field on, what's the name, field there. Can't even think of it. But we had our own programs. I worked in the summer recreation program. It was a separate program, we had everything that anybody else had.
In other words, we had softball, football, basketball. We taught tennis. We went to Owensburg, Evansville to compete with the other schools, not the other schools, but the program. Kendall was over here, and we had it to Evansville, where the coach was over there. I forget the other name. Coach, but he and Pete happened to play football together at Bluefield State, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went over there, we'd swim with them, we played them football, and there's always a rivalry between us two because of Pete as such, and also the Lincoln, the Evansville, Henderson, that mystique that you had there. So it was a good experience. And the thing about it is that Lincoln High School, Lincoln High School, they went right on into the integrated program over there.
Lincoln High School in
Evansville.
In Evansville.
Yeah, they went right on into the program as a school, Lincoln High School, not as a part of some other school. And there were children, the students that left Lincoln and went to other school as well. I don't know whether there was...
Whites came to Lincoln,
I don't know.
Saying?
That's what I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm sure that some did in their particular area because they always had a good track team. It was like Calvin Martin, who was an old everything, and I can't think of some other fellows at the time. But they went to all... The kids didn't lose anything, even though there wasn't the integration. In the school system, they had a chance to play outside. Even in our Little League program, we had our own Little League program. We had a chance to take the kids to the tournament at Purdue University as a representative of Henderson, Kentucky. You know, we really represent ourselves, but as those legs are, you know, you have to have a representative party in particular and whatnot. You can very good represent Afro-Americans and in Henderson, but you had to represent Henderson as such. But they did feel good. I think they won one game and lost another game. But it was a good experience for them to get a chance to be right there on the campus. Swimming, we had everybody. Everybody come swimming at our place, you come swimming at our meets and talk life saving, water safety, and all those particular things. So the kids here did not lose anything about being in the safety in the school. The only thing that we always wish is that we had a little bit more in the sense of money and the facilities that more kids could take part in. So we had Dixon Street. It used to be the Dixon Street Field. It wasn't ours, but we used that for softball. And you couldn't get up in the afternoon. You couldn't get up the street, because the kids were playing there in that area. We all had to live the young ones, the middle-aged ones, and the old ones and whatnot. And then the other end of town, which is the field I was talking about, in the other end of town, we'd have games up there also, so we had two places to play. The kids got a chance, all the kids got a chance to participate. So it made it pretty nice for them as such. Then we bring in some of the other teams out in the area, some were white, some were black, and they would play that as well. But it made it good for the kids. They had a chance to be exposed. And you'd be surprised when we get to talk. Do you remember such and such a time when you read that we did this or when we did that? It makes you sort of feel good. But Pete was a good person to work with. And a lot of the kids that were coaches of the teams were former athletes of ours that took over the teams. And then there was a number of elderly people who had professional black baseball experience, and they helped with the teams. And they had we had a black baseball team and stuff that they traveled all over and played as well. This kid, John Francis Burris, he couldn't read anybody's baseball team. He was a good kid.
Now, was that a school-sponsored baseball team you're talking about, or a minor league?
Yeah,
or
a recreation program.
Okay.
Yeah, but he was from the school program. And he played semi-pro. Everybody wanted him to play, and he could have gotten a chance. He could have gone football, basketball. To take a football and kick it 65 and 70 yards, we never worried about it. We'd back us up, forget it, because he was going to kick it to the tunnel or then someplace. So, in basketball, he was good. He was terrific. Ran track, high jump, and everything. And you know, his cousin, John Shirley, I mentioned him before. And the Burst family was a very outstanding. I don't know, the girls included, too. But those kids, they played together. And had to build a housing area a number of years. So the kids would they'd go from school to the housing area and they'd play in the goals down there, basketball especially. Douglas was known because of his sports program. And they won the state championship once or twice. Basketball wise, we did as well as we possibly could. A lot of the athletes at my school later on came on and played. My son was one of the outstanding ball players over there. What else is it? Swimming. We swam at the Owensburg and Evansville. And those kind of things, you know, just help the kids to stay out of trouble and such. We don't have that type of stuff in as much as it is that we should have.
Could you describe, you know, how did the races get along together in Henderson in the early 50s?
No problem at all. We just had to go to the back doors and outside doors and whatnot. A lot of times you couldn't go in. I know, there's a place on Elm Street, and I went in, my mother heard about it, and she said, Buddy, she always called me, Buddy, come in, let me tell you something. So many words, she said, if you go in again, I'll knock your block off.
Is your mother saying this for going into a white establishment?
Going in the side entrance or the back entrance. She said, you don't go in anybody's place like that. I think most people try to instill in their children to go to their own places. And there were a number of places out on Dixon Street. Now it's called Martin Luther Drive, where the kids could go to and eat and whatnot. And they good cooks and whatnot and did those in the places. I know I went to a place upon Green Street into the restaurant. And that's when my mother heard about it. She said, nope,
don't you ever do that again. And that's why I couldn't go in that period. I think the parents as well did an extremely good job in helping their children to realize what they were going through and what was happening. And then we had a very nice NAACP group. Then we had a junior NAACP group. I think my son was one of the presidents of that group, and they helped. They boycotted the Woolworth restaurant and boycotted some other places downtown. They passed the word on to the Craver Theater, where you had to go upstairs, that we're coming to boycott your place on Sunday. And of course, the doors were open and people got a chance to go in downstairs to that particular area. Because most that was, in other words, there's still there are not a lot of places in Henderson where Afro-Americans can have fairs large enough. But when the W.C. Handy Festival was here, that opened up another avenue, because Craver Theater was a segregated theater, and blacks had to go upstairs to see the movie. And so they'd open up completely, and W.C. Handy, who formerly lived here, my grandfather, Ed Johnson, W.C. Handy, were running buddies. And he stood up with my grandfather when he was married here on Dixon Street. And they played in one area, some down Clay, Kentucky, someplace. They ran him out of the city after a period of time.
The theater was integrated. Most of the other places were integrated. And stuff.
When did that come about? The integration of town, you know, the town residents and stuff. Was that after the schools or before?
After, I assume it was after the 60s schools. I can't remember the date, but were we still? Must be the last year of, I think, or after the schools. I can't remember. But NAACP group met on Sunday, and that was it. And they went there. And also the Kentucky Theater, which was the one that was open strictly to whites, they went into that one also.
Was there any problem with that? No.
When you had as many people as we had, come on in.
Right.
But go ahead.
How did the school board, this is when you're teaching, you know, when the Supreme Court made this order and how did the school board respond to the idea of integrating its students?
They were anxious. And Stanley Johnson, as I said, you know, he was, I think he was probably the main person in that particular group. And there were a couple other, I can't recall the name, but there were a couple other groups on, a couple of persons on that staff were just out of the way, you know, they were just so very negative as far as concerned.
You when you say anxious, what do you mean? They were anxious to integrate?
Yes.
Oh, so they didn't want this administration for doing it?
Yeah, they wanted to do it. Because after I went out and talked to them, you know, and told them, that, you know, I can do this, but I'm going to, in other words, you were demoted to a degree from where you were to another area. I don't know whether it was a matter of trying to spread us out in the school system. But I didn't feel right going into an elementary school as such. And all my years' experience are in high school. And I think, I think one or two. I mean, Langley was one. I think Mary Cook was Blackburn. I don't think any more than four went to the city high school.
And out of how many, you think? You're talking about four black teachers?
How many?
You're talking about four black teachers went to the city school?
Four American teachers went there, I think. But four or five, and the others were spread out in some of the other areas in school. But Rembert, he left and went to Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And he was a head football coach down there Rosenball,
Addicts.
Yeah, he was a coach down there, and he went down there and lived. And that was an area where he had a lot of leadership, lawyers, doctors, and whatnot. And those of you who are a member of a fraternity, we always met in that particular area. We always had our prayers down in that particular area because of the easiness and also because of the facilities that were there. Henderson could have done a much better job, I think, in integration, even if it's just in sports. It would help tremendously kids.
Explain what you mean.
There was no effort made to get the kids started in the program. I think you went into the program. I don't know, most places where you had the integration, the coaches had already made a round to see that that John Smith is going to come out for the team or not. But I don't think that happened as far as the city was concerned. But there are emphasis made in almost all cases that one or both of the coaches or two of the coaches would be put on the staff as such to help with the innovation. And consequently, before that, when we played sports, we have to play after the city high school team. If they are out on Friday, we can play on Friday. If they played on Friday, then we have to play on Saturday. We always took second best. I can remember once that Pete Rembert and I used to have to go down on Saturday morning after our ball game to clean up the field. I just got tired, and the fellow that was coach was John Shelton at that time. He lived the street and down, and I
were raised together. He used to be coach of the University of Louisville, maybe you remember Don Sutton. And so I asked Don, I said, Don, do you have to clean the football field? He said, no, Pierre, I don't have to clean the football field. I said, well, I wonder why we're doing it. He was, I don't know. And so I just went down by myself and went down soon after to meet with him and ask him. I said, I'm just wondering why is it that Don Shelton and his football players don't have to clean up the stadium? I said, every time we play, we've got to come down the next day, Saturday or Sunday, whatnot, to clean up the field. Oh, well, that's not your business. I said, yes, it is my business because it, you know, messes up my days and whatnot. And maybe he got on the phone to the principal, Kirkwood. He said, Jackson's down here. He didn't call me Pierre. He said, Jackson's down here asking about the field, why he had to do it. And he said, well, you know, that's the way I want it done and whatnot. And so, but the peculiar thing happened. 2 days later, on the Monday or Tuesday, he called Kirkwood and told him they don't have to clean the field anymore. So we didn't have to clean the field.
What happened?
I don't know what happened. I don't know, you had a change of heart or something like that. But I guess I was hot-headed and whatnot. But I just didn't feel that, you know, we were being treated fair and unequal and whatnot. Was the same.
So was it the coaching staff that was having to clean up the stadium and the bleachers and the
students and whatnot had to go to clean those things every Sunday. If you played on Saturday, you had to go Sunday morning or not. Or
clean it from the night before.
If they played Friday night, they would have all the stuff would be done to do that. But those kind of things just were not fair as such.
Well, so what happened? You know, how did your teaching career at Douglas finally end? Your teaching and coaching career?
My coaching career, it ended, it ended just the time of the integration.
And explain how that happened.
I just, after I found out that there was going to be a change in school systems and whatnot, and after I talked to Johnson and his staff,
superintendent,
that I would not get a job that I wanted and enjoyed doing, then I just told them at that particular meeting that I already made reservations and I already talked to people, not necessarily reservations, but already made arrangements for a new job. And that's when I started working for Human Rights Commission. I moved to Frankfort and worked up there.
Was this the same year that Douglas closed? I mean, did you leave Douglas when it closed as a facility, as a school?
Yes, right. That's the last night of graduation and everything else. And I knew that I was going in or not.
Let me clear something else up. A few minutes ago, you said that a handful of teachers went to the city high school and a handful of black teachers from Douglas got to teach at the city high school.
Yeah.
Did the board and the administration arrange for you guys to have some kind of job, even though it wasn't?
Not necessarily so.
Did some lose jobs?
Oh, yeah, some lost jobs.
And what happened to them? Yeah,
most of them left and went someplace else.
So in your case, you probably could have worked, but you didn't get a job that you would have enjoyed. No coaching.
No coaching at all, and Pete didn't get a job coaching, so he left. He left also. That's what he would left with the Hopkins job. But Kirkwood, his wife, and other people we talked about 2 minutes ago, they had jobs there also at City High School.
Why do you feel that you didn't get the opportunity to coach the city team, City High School team? Or even assistant. Would you have taken an assistant coaching job?
Well, that's all you're going to get.
Right.
That's all you're going to get.
Were you assistant at Douglas or head coach?
Pete and I, he was head coach.
Okay.
And I was assistant coach. But it was more of a family type thing, you know.
Right.
I'm not head coach and you're not the head coach.
I understand.
We come into my house and bring folks to his house and whatnot. And we did it that particular way. But I don't know if it was the coaching staff, because we knew all of them. In fact, almost every game we played, they were there watching us play. We had some good ball clubs. We had good teams, and we played good teams. Teams like Cale, Illinois, Evansville, Indiana, Paducah, Niceville, Tennessee, and what's the other? A couple other places we played. But we played good teams, and we were no slouch. And if you look on the list, it's about 38 fellas on the squad. And that means that everybody has to do that, plus somebody else's as well. And they had anyone from 60 to 70, 80 players out there on the squad.
In fact, I think our kids took pleasure and pride in being a part of the sports program. But basketball, the same way, we were known because we had a good team in all Williams. We were in the finals when we were in the leagues, Pawtucket High School leagues. We were always in the final. We made it to the state a couple of times. In fact, let me tell you this story. We went to the tournament in Franklin, Kentucky, Kentucky State, and we drew Lexington Dunbar, one of the powerhouse. Well, we had a powerhouse. We had a ball club, John Shirley, Douglas Long, John Burris, Robert Smith, and who was the other fellow we had? But we had a powerhouse. And so when we get up there, you know, Dunbar looked, we got to whip you up, so forth. So we didn't know this until after we'd already, Louisville Central came here, and they beat us 2 points in our gym. And so they knew that, you know, we had a good ball club. And so when we were there in the dormitory, as I said, I didn't know it, and Pete didn't know it. John Shirley went out that night and knocked on every Dunbar player's door. And come to the door, he said, "I'm the wild man, and I'm going to score 32 points against you tomorrow, and we're going to whip you." Man, you crazy. You're crazy. And John went to all the doors. The first play of the game, Douglas Long tipped the ball up to John Francis. John Shirley came by and got it and went up and dunked it. And that's before dunking was dunking. And the whole stadium, the whole gym stood up. Wow! John Shirley made 32 plus points. And we'd be done by the day. But that just shows, you know, what the kids want to do, that they can do, and they're playing. And we lost the game against Central, and we didn't know it until it was over that the fellows went out and broke rules after they beat Dunbar. And they were not good for just about a half of the ball game. John Shirley, I don't think he made 15 or 16 points. But if they had just provided by the rule, yeah, they were diluted by popular drink and whatnot, but not enough for us to know it. When we went to put the check him in their bid, and when we checked them in bed, they checked out after we got. So they would have whipped Louisville. But Louisville was scared.
Louisville Central.
Yeah, they were afraid of them. They were really afraid of them. And John Shirley and John Burris. They would kill you, you know, but not. But
well, tell me a little bit about your experience on the human rights, the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights in Frankfort. What did you do there?
Being a member of the Human Rights, whatever Galen Martin assigned you to do, you to do it. If that was an individual problem in northern Kentucky or southern here Kentucky or Henderson or whatnot, I came here a couple of times for little problems that they had here, just to talk to people, see what's happening, and make suggestions to them.
What kinds of problems?
Sometimes it's a matter of maybe the eating place, or maybe it may be a problem of housing. In some places it was school areas of problems that you had. At that time, things were beginning to, because of Galen and his staff, they began to get things to moving as the way that they should be able to move. And consequently, a lot of problems you didn't even see about what happened, if something happened in this area, because of one of us going in that particular area, talking to the people that are involved there, and they would be able to solve that. And that helped tremendously. Louisville had some of the larger problems that you had. Lexington, I don't think they had a lot of problems in that particular area. Henderson, we had our little problems, basically, because we were shut out of most of the individual things. And after they got to the point where the things were open up in the town, to a degree, things just sort of slacked off. I think one of the fellows that you must give a lot of credit to was Heck Lackey, who was the mayor of the town.
Here in Henderson?
Yes.
When was he mayor?
He was doing this particular time.
Right.
I can't remember.
Okay.
But he was very instrumental in helping, and he was originally from Hoppertown.
and he worked with all groups. And then if there was a problem, he would call in people, Pierre Kirkwood, whoever else was involved, said, come on down here and let's talk this thing out. And that helped to smooth over a lot of the things. There was not a lot of shooting, killing, and tearing up or burning up and anything in this particular area. But there are people, I'm sure, right today, they still aren't happy that things turned out the way they normally did.
Was there any violence at all here? Or
not
any
that I know
presence of,
organized
opposition or Klan or anything like that?
You had some people here. They had their own little groups and whatnot, but none of it to the point where it became a problem of knocking out windows and shooting up and nothing like that. I think basically because of Lackey and then the Human Rights Commission here, that's why I got my start with the Human Rights Commission here in the city of Henderson, it helped to alleviate the problems. They brought in people that would be able to help and who had been through these things and tell you how not to do and what to do to keep that things from occurring. And so Henderson was lucky enough to get off without anything that was was a problem that anybody had heard it and burned down the buildings and things like that. But it could have been a lot better if some of the people who were in the position of leadership on the other side would have loosened up a little bit more and allowed people a chance to help. Probably there could have been more jobs. There probably could have been people that who had the ability to do the jobs could have been hired in different places. And we lost a tremendous amount of people who went to other areas to live, not necessarily because of that, but because of the opportunities that were on the other side. So anyone go to St. Louis, or Chicago, Denver, Colorado, Washington, D.C., and...
Did the black population dwindle since that period a bit?
Yeah, people left and went places where things were better, mm-hmm. better for them. But it could have been a lot better if people had really seen the problems that you had. But you really couldn't see the problems. If I walk in for a job, okay, we'll get in touch with you. But they never got in touch with you for the job and hire somebody to fill that particular spot. Even if the integration of school had occurred, and it should have, and people would have been put in their positions where they should have been placed in position, the teams would probably have been much better. The students as a whole would have been much better. my youngest son didn't like school period. And he always had to run through the alley to go to Albert Street School, and he always had to run to City High School. And he was one of those kind of fellows that, he'd fight, you know, man. And a couple of times he had trouble with the teachers. And I had to come over to the school to talk to him about his way he handled himself. And then, even in sports, if he didn't do right, he didn't like it, the way the that he was doing it, well, he said, forget it. So yeah. He was one that didn't play sports as a whole, but I think the input would have been much greater of the kids into the sports program, and it would have developed a lot earlier if there had been assistance from us as a whole. Because when you have 35 or 40 kids, 50 kids, and we'd get every kid out of school to play sports. Every kid who played something, on Saturday when we had our recreation program, we had people come down to teach them ballet and dancing, tap dancing, flowy plays, and they'd do those kind of things and keep them active and keep them short, keep them sharper. But a lot of this disappeared when I left and the recreation program. It always tickled me, but the fellow, I think it was Jim Williams, the Kennedy Recreation Center up there. And so he called me down, and I was running the swimming pool, and he was a neighbor of mine down on Green Street. And he said, Pierre, we're thinking about building a recreation center, where you suggest. I said, well, funny area where it is located now. That would be nice. He said, well, we're going to call you down and let you give us some ideas of what to do. The swimming pool was already down at the bottom of the hill. And so I waited, and I waited, and I'm still waiting to be called in to give them some ideas to what should be put in the building and for the kids. So they built what they want up there. It's used very well, very well. They have a gymnasium. That's the largest area. They have two small little buildings, rooms where they have a stage. Something going on in the gym, that's it, because you don't have enough area to take care of things. I think they have 6 or 8 or 10 computers up there, and they actually teach my son that at his church up there for a while. But it needs to be enlarged because it is the center. There's no swimming pool in the particular area. They had a swimming pool down there, and it was well used. In fact, we used it football. After the swimming season, that's where we dress, and that's where the kids swim. That's why they use the water as a whole to help the formations. And so in some kind of way, they said it was cracking at the bottom, and then they built it, and it's gone, and they don't have one. So Henderson has one public pool and a number of private pools. And then really, the kids, I don't know whether they take part of it or whether the kids are involved in the swimming program as such. That's a vital part of any city. And if you really, I guess you learn to swim in the pool, do they? So that they don't have that as such. But everything in the city now is moving away from the neighborhood. Everything is out from the border or the fields and everything else involved. And the teams as a whole are lily white. Most of them, you may have one African-American on the team. And,
in the sports here, you're talking?
No, I'm talking about in the recreation program.
Okay, recreation program.
Yeah, and the sports, I mean, the African-American kids, they carry it. Most of them carry the program. They do extremely good job here. But there could be much more, you know, involvement into the program. A lot of kids, you and I, being coaches, we could probably go out on the corner and pick up enough players to go whip any team in the neighborhood for the kids there. But I guess it's going to be as it is. And there's been no ideas or plans to hire any Afro-American coaches. I don't think the coaches, they don't have an Afro-American coach in the city high school program. I mean, in the county high school program.
Has there been in...
I don't think they were officially hired. I think they were asked to come to make the presence as such. I think the fellow was a psychologist. He's Afro-American. He's always on the sideline. I don't gotta get you what people think that he's a member of the coaching staff. But there could be room for Afro-Americans in the program. Basketball and the basketball teams are predominantly head stars and whatnot, Afro-American. The kid Dixon, Dixon, but he's going to Purdue University this year, and has tremendous grade point average, and probably he would have been a lot better off. He had a little help to play in the games and such.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Jackson, anything else you want to say? That pretty much wraps up my questions.
I don't know. The Henderson is as a whole. We're hurting here because we don't have a lot of business people, people that are active. I think most people are sort of satisfied with what they have instead of looking forward what they could have. In the areas, there needs to be more recreational facilities for the kids here. There needs to be more involvement as far as the law is concerned. I don't know whether they have one or two Afro-American policemen. We are getting doctors and